Robinhood Radio presents Stage Right or Not with Michelle Willems. Michelle is a longtime journalist and herself is a published playwright of several theatrical works. She's a frequent contributor to the Huffington Post, Daily Beast, and the Atlantic websites.
Another opening of another show.
Well, I saw three shows this past week. One on Broadway, an oldie that hopes to remain a goodie. Another is a contemporary version of a famous book that begat several movies and now a theatrical rethinking. And finally, a new play by an old, as in long time, playwright who always manages to get stellar names attached to his projects. So, how timeless are these works? Well, let's start on Broadway at the Broadhurst Theater, where multiple Tony winner Audra McDonald and former Oscar nominee Michael Shannon are starring in a revival of Terrence McNally's Frankie and Johnny at the Clair de Lune. Now, this one has been done in various forms over the years, at least twice on stage, most recently with Edie Falco and Stanley Tucci, and on the screen with Al Pacino and Michelle Pfeiffer. So to answer your first question, no, Audra McDonald does not sing here. But she acts beautifully, as does Shannon, and yet I can't quite understand why this one now. It was written in 1987, the same year, interestingly, that Burn This, another revival playing nearby, was written, which also feels dated, but at least that one has several characters that keep you hanging in. Frankie and Johnny is a 2-hour, 15-minute two-hander that depends on real chemistry. As fine as McDonald and Shannon are, I just didn't feel the heat. And while every show need not be seen through the Me Too lens, this one feels downright creepy at times. A hovering, aggressive guy, a woman who keeps saying, please go, well, until she suddenly doesn't. And Terrence McNally's wit was not at its sharpest here. John sounds like a toilet or a profession. I could not be seriously involved with someone who says, pardon my French. Those are a few of the examples. And Shannon's whole first monologue is about body part humor that frankly seems more appropriate to the adolescent crowd. Ultimately, this play is about the need to find real intimacy. That's not connecting, that's holding and staring, Frankie says at one point. And about one couple's long night's journey into day. Whether audiences will connect, well, this is a limited run, and tickets are already being offered for half price. Still, if the idea of seeing a film star on stage, occasionally butt naked, by the way, or one of the great singing actresses of our time talking only, well, this may be your moment. And there is that beautiful composition by Claude Debussy of the title, which gets a full playing here. Meanwhile, the Manhattan Theater Club is premiering a new work by Donald Margulies called Long Lost. It is at City Center, where I don't foresee a long run. Now, this is a four-character piece, an upper-crust husband and wife, their college-age son home for Christmas, and a surprise visitor, one Uncle Billy. Well, it doesn't take us long to get the gist here with lines like, can't I drop in on my little brother? You're all I've got. Are you using again? Last time I saw him must have been at the funeral, and so on. Now, Margulies is a celebrated playwright, having given us works like Dinner with Friends and Sight Unseen, but this one feels just plain tired. Attempts at humor are groan-worthy at times. I Googled it, said one character. What are you, a Hardy Boy? Comes a response. Anytime there is a lull, the next catastrophic plot point emerges. Possible double murder, two cases of infidelity, take your pick. The direction by the highly esteemed Daniel Sullivan is equally stolid. I feel bad for the actors, including Annie Paris and Kelly Acoine, who are familiar faces from stage and television, but they have nothing remotely believable or relatable to do here. And if I never see another show about a black sheep uncle who is beyond annoying but ends up the wisest guy on stage, well, I will be a happier person. And finally, we move further downtown to the Cherry Lane Theater, where a very different kind of playwright, young Kate Hamill, is doing her thing with Little Women. Now, previously, Hamill has taken properties like Vanity Fair and Sense and Sensibility and given them jazzy, funny new takes. So now she turns to Louisa May Alcott's famous story of the four March sisters and their strong-willed mom, known as Marmee. It's an excellent production, encompassing about half the book, paring down but enhancing particular parts and characters. Now, it might seem galling to install or instill, whatever the word is, your own voice on such famous material, but Hamill explains her process. She calls it reclaiming the classics, creating, she says, inclusive, feminist, socially relevant themes. They are, she admits, radical adaptations. Well, some work better than others. Little Women is appropriate, I think, since feminine roles have changed dramatically, and yet sibling roles likely have not. At different times in our lives, we have probably identified with one sister, and then in other times, we might identify with another. I am Marmee now, says one sister. The gender issue, no surprise, is heightened here. Not only does Jo dream of being a writer, she imagines how much better her life would be if she were a man. Do your best at school, she tells her male counterpart, since I cannot. Meanwhile, he feels the burdens of manhood, especially at a time when, as one character says, men are taking the field. This is, let's not forget, a story that takes place while the country was at war with itself. There is humor in this take, especially in the first act. Fortunately, the malapropisms know when to abate. The second act is pretty much bathed in sadness and sentiment, but it all works pretty darn well, and this is one show I would hope three generations of one family could enjoy. By the way, I think it is fair to say that Little Women is having a real moment. A TV version has been made, and yet another film adaptation will be out later this year, directed by Greta Gerwig. Now, that's apparently the eighth attempt. Well, think back and you'll probably recall Katharine Hepburn, June Allison, Winona Ryder, Susan Sarandon, and more. Proving Jill, this tale has obviously stood the test of time.
Does anyone remember the sequel to Little Women?
Oh, was it Little Men?
Yes, there was Little Men. There was, but I think so. But the Jo's boys was a really interesting thing because she, you know, you got read the book, but they went on to open a school, and it was absolutely splendid.
Now, is that written by Alcott herself?
Jo's boys, I think so.
Uh-huh, that's interesting. And there was a book many years later called March. I think it was just called March. It's about the father, who, of course, we never see. Well, actually, we do at the end. He's in the Civil War during most of the book. And remember that book several years ago was written. That was a nice book.
Yeah.
I think it was written by Gwendolyn Brooks. I'm not promising, but I think it was.
Little Men was Little Men was called Or Life at Plumfield with Jo's Boys, and they were both written by Louisa May Alcott.
I'm so glad to hear that she wrote other books. I guess I should have known that she wasn't one of those one-hit wonders.
No, she wasn't. She was, long many years ago when these used to exist, we had playing cards of famous writers. You know, flashcards that now I don't think they exist anymore. But it was a good way to while away the time on a trip if you had a sibling that, now I imagine everybody's either watching some sort of video or, on their own individual device turning into an invertebrate with their head down. But that's neither here nor there. What's more important in this particular thing is that at the time, there have been so many different Little Women.
Yes, there have.
But I would always say, hey, you know, did you read the book? Read the book first and then see how this Little Women compares to.
Well, that's interesting. I brought my daughter actually to the show the other day, who has read the book and seen many of the films right from the start to now. And she was very insightful, actually helpful to me about things that were left out, you know, when they stopped, what they didn't deal with. And she really remembered it very vividly, but also how at different times in our lives we do. At one point we want to be Joe, of course, the strong-willed, you know, writer. Then another time we don't make fun of Beth anymore. She's sort of the Melanie from Gone with the Wind.
I never wanted to be Beth, and I never wanted to be Melanie. Well, but that's why nobody ever made me a writer.
That leaves Amy and Joe for you, I guess.
Well, Meg was all right. She just was Meg was trying to be the I mean, she just wasn't brave. Brave is the wrong word. Meg was so traditional.
Right.
But there was something about the comfort in tradition.
Right.
I don't know anyone who really wanted to be Meg, but that's the problem with being the oldest.
There was a little girl at the show. I mean, a little girl, probably like 10. And I said, have you read the book? And she said, no.
Is there a book?
Yeah, exactly. I said, well, you should. But she was there. I don't know why. She probably knew somebody in the show or whatever. But it's nicely done. You know, I guess you could say Louisa May Alcott and Harriet Beecher Stowe certainly wrote the most important books, I would think, about the Civil War.
How did you find it compared? Did you see Vanity Fair, presumably? And
I did, and that one did not knock me out. That was Sense and Sensibility was the best.
Okay,
that really made Kate Hamill in terms of what she's trying to do, and that was a phenomenal performance and production. Very clever. It was done down at Judson Church. Had a long run. Vanity Fair wasn't as good. But anyway, this seems to suit her in many ways. She's getting better, you know. She's in her early 30s, I believe. But these are pretty risky, pretty gutsy things to do. But I guess you could say that Aaron Sorkin did it to Harper Lee. So, you know.
So fair is fair.
Yeah, exactly.
And what was were you happy with Frankie and Johnny?
No, fair. Fair. Like I said, I'm not quite sure why they did it. I think it's probably, you know, they're two plum roles.
Irresistible, probably, no?
Yeah, if you're free for 3 months, because that's the run is no longer than 3 months. You know, you're free. Hey, let's try it. Audra gets to do something besides singing, though she doesn't sing on The Good Fight, which is a wonderful TV series playing now. So maybe she's moving more into dramatic acting. You know, they're plum roles. I remember seeing it with Edie Falco and Stanley Tucci, and my memory of that is they really played the entire first act stark naked. I will say Audra McDonald very quickly jumps out of bed and puts on a robe. So you kind of get a little bit of her. Him, you see a little more. But I do remember that a lot. So I guess I don't know. I'd have to go back to the actual script and see what Terrence McNally, if he says, this act should be played totally in the nude. I don't think it matters. I'm glad I saw it. I think it's too long. I think it would probably be better in an intimate setting and one act instead of two. But what can I say? There is that beautiful music.
And do you have, in the last minute, any Tony commentary? Any Tony tips that would...
Next we talk will be next Monday. It'll be the day after. So we can talk all about it then. I think it's going to be close. I think that Tootsie's going to win Best Actor. I think Hadestown is going to win Best Musical. I think Temptations will win Best Choreography. So you got your three top musicals vying against each other. I think each of them could win something big. I don't think it'll be a runaway for anybody. It's not that kind of year. I think Bryan Cranston will probably win just because every time Bryan Cranston comes to New York, they give him an award. And I forget who else. I hope Laurie Metcalf doesn't win. I don't think she will. So I don't know. I think it'll be spread out pretty well. It'll be real interesting to talk. And well, then there'll be shows that are going to put up closing notices, probably by Tuesday or Wednesday.
Stage Right or Not with Michelle Willens, produced in the studios of Robin Hood Radio, robinhoodradio.com.